Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
The worst combination is Texas up, Texas A&M down, price of oil up. That's bad.
Ross Gellinger.
Cranberry-ish, whatever color you want to call them, Pat. They were nice dress slacks. They were colorful. Okay, you know, just shoot me here for having some color in my outfit.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Bring up relegation. People get so excited. In this job, if you want to get all of us an avalanche of unwanted emails, bring up playoff format and realignment.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod presented by Invesco QQQ. Race for the Case. Big weekend is here. Six matchups featuring ranked versus ranked teams. A number of other really interesting games that we will get to. We talked about a bunch of them earlier this week. So go back to the last show if you didn't hear it. We're not just going to keep talking Ole Miss Alabama over and over and over unless Taylor Swift weighs in or something like that. I do want to do this, though. Since our last thing, one of the more intriguing stories that came out was the television rating for the Colorado State game. And we expected it to be very high. We did not expect it to be as high as it is. And I think it explains a great deal on the phenomenon that's going on right now and a little bit of the push and pull with some traditional fans going, why is everyone talking about Colorado and Deion Sanders? Why is ESPN going wall to wall with this? Why so much attention on a team that's 3-0 but isn't considered a legit national title hope? Colorado's double overtime victory. Let me put it this way. This is a national AP story that went over the National Wire, Associated Press. They did a story about a TV rating for a college football game. There aren't a whole lot of those. So that alone will tell you that this is news. Colorado's double overtime victory against Colorado State, which ended in the early morning hours Sunday for most of the country, drew 9.3 million viewers to make it the most watched late night football game ever on ESPN. It was ESPN's fifth most watched regular season game ever in any time slot.
It's incredible.
That is a Colorado versus Colorado State, not Texas versus Alabama, not Notre Dame, Texas, not Michigan versus whatever, whatever massive game you come up with, two huge markets and fan bases. There is a group of five team involved in this. They cannibalize their own market. There isn't even two markets. I'm going to get to, we'll play a little game of predict the next rating because I think it'll only go up because the game's at 3:30 Eastern this week against Oregon. But Pat, how does this help explain why we are where we are here?
100%. Absolutely. It's a huge explainer. And I've had some people say, well, nobody used to talk about TV ratings. You're only doing it because the TV people made you because they turned that into the reason for realignment. Well, okay. So now we know it's a very important metric to people in college athletics, for one thing. But for another, if you want to concretely quantify the Deion Sanders phenomenon, this does it. These numbers do it. You can sit here and say, wow, it sure seems like a lot of people are interested. I'm hearing a lot of people talking. Oh, no, here's the actual proof right here. 9 million people to watch Colorado against Colorado State in a game that ended at 2:20 a.m. Eastern time. It's like the most astounding TV number I've ever heard. So that says everything, I think, about the fascination with Deion Sanders and this Colorado team and what they're doing. It is emblematic of, I think, the number of casual fans that have flocked to this, the number of fans who maybe are Deion Sanders fans or just gravitate to his personality in a celebrity culture, and then the other celebrities that are gravitating to the Colorado celebrity phenomenon. You know, this is just, we've seen, you know, I think we seem to be in kind of a bandwagon cycle in America, maybe in the world. I don't know. But, you know, like this summer, everyone had to see Taylor Swift in concert, right? Well, everyone has to see Colorado football on TV right now. It's the thing out there in sports. And it's just, it's fascinating. It's intriguing. And yeah, where will it go from here? Can't wait to find out. But this, the number to me tells a big story behind the story here.
Well, the number, and just think about, yeah, the time. I mean, it was crazy. 2:30 in the morning that game ended I think it had, over 8 million like the peak or something in the middle of the night.
No, it was like 8.2 million were watching at the end of the game.
at 2:30.
That's a million more than anybody else on any other game that week.
Yeah. Prime effect. It's remarkable. And I don't know, you know, you always try to compare things. Like, I don't know that this can compare to anything. I mean, of any takeover of a program, to have something like this where you have ratings like this, it's remarkable. And you got to think if Colorado's going to do that kind of rating against Colorado State in the middle of the night, you know, and I know we're going to get to it, but what's going to happen this weekend? What's that rating going to be this weekend?
So first off, football ratings are up and continue to go up too. NFL ratings are up. So, you know, it's my always thing, don't bet against football. First off, we've long covered TV ratings here.
We've talked about it on the show for years.
I mean, it's a dominant thing. So, but yeah, the total audience was amazing. Pat, I think you actually have a very interesting point that it's a very fractured media environment, right? Like, you'd be out with people and they go, oh, do you watch this show? You mentioned a show the other day, Only Murderers in the Building or something. Yeah. I saw some billboards for that. I haven't seen an episode. And like, there's so much quality out there and people are totally into this show and you don't see it. It's not like the 1980s, 90s, even 2000s, let alone like back when, you know, like one out of every four people were watching, or like half the people in the country were watching MASH or these old shows. There's nothing. So when something pops, people go crazy. And I actually, because remember, like, was it Barbie, like the biggest?
Yeah.
Like Barbie, like everyone's, I mean, okay. Like this is, it's not going to go down as like the top 10 greatest film of all time. Or you said Taylor Swift or Beyonce's concert, whatever the concert is, you know, across this week, I had three different people who I talked to who are not just friends of mine or people I know who never expressed any interest or much interest in college football. And they're fired up for Deion Sanders. I think there's something about Deion. He is able to be whatever you want him to be. He is incredibly charismatic and funny. He's flashy and authentic. He's religious. He's old school. He's new school, right? Like he's got the sunglasses, and then he talks about, you know, you can go on and watch him talk to the team about, you know, why he wants people to own pickup trucks because you think about work and stuff. Like he's really interesting in a lot of ways. So if you're into whatever you're into, right? Some 60-year-old guy sits there and goes, I like how he talks about manual labor and the importance of work and getting up every day and doing your job. And then there's a 15-year-old kid going, awesome shades. You see that hat? Right. You see the watch he's wearing? You see the watch Shador's wearing? Like, totally, he appeals to so many different people that this phenomenon's more than, it's much, much more than football. Because they're not, I mean, it was a fun game. These are fun games. But if you love football, well, you really would never watch college. The same way you would never watch college basketball. Like, the football on Sunday is better.
Yeah.
Okay? It just is. They're pros. This is college. It's different. But they are tuning in and flocking to this game because Deion Sanders represents so many different things to so many people. If you ask people why they like him, and I do know there are people that are rooting against them and they're kind of getting tired because there's so much hype, and that's natural. But I do think there's a lot more people rooting for him than against him.
Yeah. He is vast and contains multitudes, to your point. There are a lot of angles and facets to him that people can gravitate toward or be repelled by. Either way, And so he is polarizing. There's no doubt about it. My colleague Richard Johnson, we were on a conference call yesterday or whatever, and he mentioned, it was an interesting point, I thought, that there's a little bit, like this is an unprecedented phenomenon in a lot of ways, but there's a little bit of Georgetown basketball, Miami Hurricanes football, Vegas basketball here, where this is a, for lack of a better way to phrase this, this is an unapologetically black man leading a largely black team that is achieving at a very high level and doing it in a really riveting, interesting way. And so that has brought it's another whole dynamic to this that I find really interesting. And like it, don't like it, but people are paying attention to it. And it's just all of this is emanating from one guy. It's a fascinating, fascinating dynamic.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, he had Lil Wayne lead him out onto the field with like a mini concert, you know, like we don't see these things. He's just, you know, he's going all in with, like you said, like kind of the unapologetically kind of black right thing. And I think we just haven't seen that in college football. We've seen that in a lot of other things, but we haven't seen that in college football. And I think it has, you have a lot of people in the country that have embraced that and believe that it was needed and necessary. And then you have those that, right, don't. And it is kind of this polarizing thing. But it has been fascinating to watch play out. Really, really is something that I can't recall anything comparable to it. The Miami one, yeah, that's an interesting comparison. But I've been trying to like think about when's the last time we've seen something similar to this.
I agree with some of that for sure. Obviously, I think African Americans are seeing themselves in this program or this guy and all that, particularly in football. There's part of that. Those teams were dominant. I would say, John Thompson, in a way, was Deion Sanders.
Yes,
because of what he represented. Miami was broke the rule team. I don't necessarily know that. I mean, like, Colorado breaks some of the norms. There's no question. I mean, they had a DJ in the locker room and things like that. They're not the first team to have celebrities, but I think, but you know, like that Miami team is about the players and the attitude. This is about a singular person.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, nobody knows any of the players other than he's got his two sons. Mm-hmm. And then Travis Hunter, and they're not that good. Like they're not Miami good. There's a little of that or fat, like there's part of that, but his appeal is very wide. And I just think he's very authentic in all ways. I certainly not dismissing the connection with African-Americans or anything like that, but the faith part is big too.
Sure.
You know, I mean, sure. He's not backing down from William Christopher Sweeney with the Bible verses and all of that, right? Like he's all in on that too. So you sit there and go, well, that's my thing. I just think he can be so many different things. All right, play a quick game of this. He's also really funny. That's the other
he's
part.
He's very funny. He's clever. He's sharp-witted.
He's way more famous. Like John Thompson got famous because he was a coach. Right. This guy arrived famous.
He was, he was already famous.
Yeah. You know, in our house, the catchphrase all week is play me my theme music, right? I mean, it's just absurd. Right? My wife's going to have the theme music now. I don't know what it is. I mean, who doesn't want that? Who doesn't want theme music though, right?
I want theme music.
I want a theme music.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what we want to do is play a quick game of over under. What do you think? We're going to have to play a game. What do you think the rating will be on Saturday?
I'm going to say 10 low, and I'm guessing. I don't know how these things tend to work, but the only reason it's not higher than that, I think it'll be higher than last week, which was crazy, but I think it'll be – but the game is the same time as Ole Miss, Alabama, and UCLA, Utah. So there's going to be a little bit more diffuse watching, but I'm going to say 10-2.
All right, there you go, 10-2.
And that's why mine's going to be lower than that, because it, you know, the Colorado State game was, that was it, right? There was really nothing else on. I think like Arizona or something else, somebody else was playing, but some of their late night Pac-12 game that nobody probably watched. So it was like by itself. So I don't think it'll be probably around the same rating. So like, let's go 8.8,
yeah,
because of the competition that it'll have, you know.
I bid $1. $1. I'm going to get the showcase showdown.
Price is right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd go probably the same. I don't think, I agree. I mean, people are going to, especially if the game isn't close, you got to have have other dynamics. Who knows?
That's the thing. This could get out of hand, I think.
Right. Yeah. But if Colorado's leading, yeah, it's going to be pretty big. All right. I will go up. So I should bid like 8.9 to cut Ross off. I don't know what we win for this game.
I said 8.8.
I know, and I'm taking 8.9. Now I have the gap. Do you ever watch Price is Right?
Oh, I thought you were trying to go under.
It's strategy. It's strategy. I'm not going 8.7.
I think that's what I thought. That's what I thought you would do.
No.
8.7.
I could go one viewer. See, and then I could have all the space between one viewer and 8.8. This is really stupid. Let's move on.
Okay. All right. Moving on.
I mean, even by our standards, this is getting done.
Yeah.
All right, Ross. You had a couple different interesting stories this week. One of them is on the Pac-2, or we like to call them the Tupac, which are meeting in the bowl this weekend. Oregon State, number 14, visits number 21. Washington State, 7 o'clock on Fox. Would be a great game up against Ohio State, Notre Dame, but should be pretty fun to get back and forth on that. You have stories that they're considering what they're considering going forward, including a two-team Pac. The literal Pac-2, or some kind of deal with the Mountain West where you're setting up like English soccer relegation, which would make like, I guess the worst games matter or something. I don't know. What are they smoking up there? What are they smoking up there in the Pacific North?
Hey, it is the Pacific
Northwest. And can
Northwest,
I get in on right? it? This is, I like, yeah. I know I'm not saying like it's a bad smoke thing, a but they have freed their mind.
Yeah. I think the goal is, to try to be different, unique, you know, and creative. This has been something bantered about for a while as far as like a Premier League style division for, you know, the powerhouses of college football, whenever they inevitably, quote unquote, break off, that they would do this Premier League thing. Well, I mean, maybe it can be done in other areas. And I think it's one of many options on the table. We should make that clear. And maybe it is like a long shot, but it is one of the options on the table, and it has a lot of support actually from both sides, the Pac-2 and the Mountain West folks. So I think the options are, one, this relegation system, two, some kind of, you know, merger, you know, in the Pac-12 where they come under the Pac-12 brand, you know, banner, or three, they rebuild the Pac, you know, two in some way and take teams, you know, take the best here and rebuild. But obviously the most fascinating is this relegation system. In, you know, it's just an idea right now. It hasn't really been seriously vetted, but it does have support to continually, I think, explore it, even if it's not something that can happen in a year or two, that it might happen down the line. And that is, yeah, some kind of relegation. You have two conferences, maybe even three conferences, and the bottom, you know, bottom teams would be dropped down and relegated to the lower tier. And then the top teams of certain leagues would be moved up to other leagues, you know, promoted. So it's really interesting. And it does create, it gives you the ability to create some pretty like interesting matchups, especially late in the season when teams are competing for relegation promotion. And then the last weekend of the season where you have like actually the relegation games, you know, so it's really fascinating. Like I said, I don't know that I put it at the top of the options. I think right now, honestly, and I think John Canzano had a story about this earlier this week, and it's something I've definitely heard they're exploring. I think, you know, it's been written about a little bit, is that, you know, they right now they're the Pac-2, and for at least a season, they might be the Pac-2, and they might have to build and match and mix and match schedules. I know they've been talking to the Mountain West about like some kind of scheduling alliance of some sort, maybe to just try to patch together a schedule for a year. Because something to note, is this court case they're fighting with the other Pac-12 schools to try to get control specifically of the assets, the money, the millions of dollars in the Pac-12. This court case might go several months. So at some point, you got to put together a schedule for at least 24. And I think they're working towards that. But it's an interesting situation that they're in. And as a couple of Mountain West ADs told me, and again, I think there's some pretty good support for the relegation system. We need to do something different. You know, we need to be different in some way. We need to be attractive in some way to TV and do something different than everybody else is doing.
Is this going to be Ted Lasso season 4? I think this is Ted.
Basically.
Everyone wants 4. This could be it, right? Go ahead, Pat.
No, I want just for pure entertainment value, I want to see a 2-team conference next year. And, you know, the conference standings at the end, one team's 1-0, the other team's 0-1. There you have it. And then you can have a rematch, I guess, in a championship game.
Somebody mentioned playing each other like six, you know, playing each other like 9 times or something.
Well, yeah, or that they can just play home and home and home and home and home and home and home.
Like the ALCS or something, yeah.
Yeah. They could play in Corvallis, Pullman, Portland, Seattle. There's 4, and then, you know, pick like some random location in between. No, and funny, you bring up relegation, people get so excited. In this job, if you want to get all of us an avalanche of unwanted emails, bring up playoff format and realignment. And everybody's got their own ideas, which good for them. I'm not dogging that, but they'll be like, well, here's what I would do. And what we need is relegation. Everybody loves the idea of having relegation in other sports other than European soccer. So I can understand the allure of that, the temptation of it. I would love to see how all this is actually going to work. But this is the time to think creatively if you're these two schools, because you ain't got a lot of good options.
Yeah. You would not get an automatic bid to the playoff winning a 2-team. I think you got to have at least they'll come up with something. It's not a trick. Like Notre Dame technically is its own. They could just declare their own conference.
Yeah.
conference. Or they could link up. Then you're like, if you're Notre Dame and they say, wait, you got an automatic bid. If you win we'll just link up with like UMass. And beat, like, if we beat UMass, we're in the playoff. Is that it?
Yeah.
We're like, come up with something, right? Yeah. Just be like, we're the champs. Everyone would just form a 2. That's actually would create more spread out the power, right? Alabama just be like, all right, we're out of the SEC. We're just going to do this. All right, go ahead.
Well, you know, the real goal of the relegation system, which would be like, you know, the Mountain West and the Pac-12. Mountain West would be the lower tier, Pac-12 would be the top tier. The real goal, though, is preserving both conferences as separate conferences. So they have to be recognized as separate conferences from the NCAA and the CFP, because they would, by preserving two conferences, well, you keep the brand and the assets of the Pac-12 and all that, and same with the Mountain West, but you get the AQ spots in Olympic championships, all the other sports outside of football, and of course basketball as well. You keep the AQ spots, and that's one of the issues obviously with this proposal is, like, you know, if you have a relegation system where the top two teams in the Mountain West are being promoted to the Pac-12 and the bottom of the Pac-12 being relegated to the Mountain West, and both of these conferences are like run by one conference office, well, isn't this just one conference? Like, why is it separate? So there's a lot of issues with this plan. You know, and money is another issue. Like, could you get enough TV money to where you could do this, where you have the Mountain West making, say, $4 million a year and the Pac-12 making $6 million a year? Because that's the real differentiating factor, right? Is your schedule, as far as what conference you're in, your schedule, and in the money that you're going to make it from revenue. You get more in the Pac-12, less in the Mountain West. There's a lot of issues, and then it just goes on and on. So there are a bunch of holes. We try to poke a few of the holes in the story, but it's an interesting discussion topic, and it's being discussed by, you know, pretty high level people in that room. I think if there's 7 proposals on the table for the Mountain West and the Pac-12, you know, this is one of them.
All right, I want to get to this. Not so much the substance of these meetings, all the ADs and stuff went to Washington again to I think they've moved on. I almost feel like they've moved on to the next Sky is Falling.
Yeah.
Doesn't it seem that way? Now they're on to revenue sharing concerns. They've given up on NIL, kind of. They're not all the way there, but they're kind of getting there with like, yeah, okay, that didn't kill us. But the next thing, I know the last 15 things that said was going to kill us didn't. But wait, this next one, oh my God, we're dead.
Yeah.
This is why I don't believe them. I know they get mad, but they just keep repeating the same stuff. Anyway, they came to Washington, did more hearings, and I don't even know all the stuff, how the stuff works. We'll get Schoolhouse Rock to explain it. But our own Ross Dellinger, our own Ross Dellinger was part of a conference. I don't know what this thing was. You'll have to explain it. But they gathered all these ADs and their lobbying firm, and they got U.S. senators to come. You had to skip out the other day at the end because of Ted Cruz. You're going to be up with Ted Cruz, Chris Murphy from Connecticut, Joe Manchin of West Virginia. Was Tuberville there? Did we get Tuberville?
No, Tuberville wasn't there. Just those Tommy three Tubbs. Senators and then a Congresswoman, Lori
Trahan. Skipped out like Tuberville on the recruiting trail. Now, here's the question that we got. I don't really care what got said. We can talk about that another day. It's too many good games. However, a picture emerged. A picture was released by Senator Chris Murphy, sends out a tweet, and it has a picture of him talking very intelligently. There's a woman to his left. I don't know who she is.
Lori Trahan, Congresswoman.
Okay. I apologize. I'm not up on my... I can tell you, like, Mountain West offensive coordinators, not so much the politicians. I focus on more important things. And then there is our Ross Dellinger. And the issue is not that you're there. You're looking very intent. I guess you were leading this discussion. You were the centerpiece. This outfit. Okay, everyone else is dressed up in suits. Everyone's a senator is in a tie. The congresswoman looks very nice. What are you wearing? And I will not applaud you more than going looking like you rolled out of bed to go talk to U.S. senators. I could not be more proud of you for and your representation of this podcast than what are you wearing Crocs? Are you wearing Crocs?
No.
It looks like what? It.
No. Explain the outfit. Explain the
outfit. I was wearing black dress shoes. Crocs? What are you talking about? I was in black dress shoes. I was in polka-dotted socks, dress socks. They were polka dots, but they were dress socks. Okay. I wore my very nice red slacks. Okay.
Kind of like cranberry colored.
Cranberry-ish, whatever color you want to call them, Pat. They were nice dress slacks. They were colorful. Okay, you know, just shoot me here for for having some color in my outfit. The whole room was nothing but blue and black and brown. Forgive me, I want to add a dash of color. And then I was in a long sleeve blue sweater-ish thing. That where my regret is not throwing a sports coat over it. Probably should have done that.
No collared shirt underneath. Mm-hmm. Didn't shave. Hair, I don't believe there was a comb. I don't believe a comb was involved.
Killing me, Dan.
Fantastic.
Killing me.
Fantastic.
Yeah. No, so, that is proper pod dress code. That is what that is.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
is.
Good work.
Don't you want to know what actually happened at the event?
No, no. I know what they did. They whined about stuff that isn't a problem.
No, the senators were very revealing.
Well, I know. All right. Cruz said 60-40, which is probably like 10 to 90.
So, yeah. So we had three senators. I was doing a Q&A. I was in charge of the Q&A to these three senators in three separate sessions, 25-minute sessions. And yeah, to ball it all down, basically – Joe Manchin didn't say anything really noteworthy or newsworthy. Ted Cruz said that he gives it a 60-40 chance at a bill passing soon, an NIL bill passing soon. And then Chris Murphy walked up there and basically said, no, Ted is wrong. It's not 60-40. It's below 50-50. There's little chance of it happening. So the room of ADs got a really good picture of how different the views are in Congress. And that was kind of the point. You had someone on the far right, Ted Cruz, far left, Chris Murphy, and then in the middle, you had Joe Manchin. They all kind of offered different views. But I will say this, the one kind of what I thought is a news nugget that came out of it was from Ted Cruz about the negotiations ongoing in the Senate. You know, Ted Cruz is the ranking member of the Senate Commerce, which will have jurisdiction over an NIL bill. Ranking member means he's the top Republican. And then you have the chair, who's a Democrat, Maria Cantwell. And they've been working together. They have lunch every third week. And he said last week at lunch, half of the lunch was spent talking about NIL. So the wheels are creaking to life in the Senate, maybe?
Well, all I know is the same group lobbied and said that NIL was going to create uneven playing field, destroy the sport and all that 2 years ago. And now, obviously, that has not happened. In fact, it's, if anything, leveled the sport considerably. I'm thinking these guys are just there to collect their check from lead one. And we're working on it.
My big takeaway is it was the proudest sports writer dress moment since Charlie Pierce, the great Charles Pierce, used to wear his swag hat to the Final Four every year.
That is, it's pretty.
I did. I walked in my house afterward, and I was like, Liz, my wife, I really should have wore a suit, shouldn't I have? And she's like, yeah, you were talking to senators. I'm like, yeah.
Screw.
I don't know what happened there.
Screw them.
I don't have very good suit options. Some of them don't fit.
I think this is perfect. I think it spoke to the importance of this meeting. And I think you did great. We are very proud of you here. We are very proud of you. Yes. We'll be back after this message. All right, we're going to pick a bunch of the big games this weekend, but there are a lot of other games that are really fascinating. I want to go through pretty quickly. So maybe, like, if you don't have anything to say, don't worry about it. That's for
lightning
you.
Lightning round.
We're going to go lightning round here. That's a better way to put it. We have a couple desperation bowls is what I would call them. The desperation bowl. None bigger than Oklahoma State at Iowa State. Oklahoma State coming off a loss to South Alabama. Iowa State coming off a loss to Ohio. Matt Campbell not on the hot seat. Don't say he's on the hot seat. Might get a fistful of Matt Campbell coming at you. Pat, it's ugly in Stillwater. It's maybe I don't know if it's as ugly in Ames, but it ain't great. These two will get around to sipping some water and talking about their problems. thoughts on this one?
Matt Campbell, no, not on the hot seat, but no longer a hot coach for, you know, whose name came up for every open high-level job, I would say. But Matt Campbell doesn't rub people the wrong way nearly as much as Gundy does. I think that if you're an AD, you'd rather work with Matt Campbell than with Mike Gundy. Now, firing Gundy after the length of his tenure and his accomplishments would be difficult, but whoever loses this game comes out of it feeling bad. I see nothing to like about either team. The one thing, like, Iowa State has one excuse. It's not a very good excuse. Yeah, our guys were betting on our own games, and so we had to suspend them. Or they had to leave school. But, that is a desperation bowl. I will take Iowa State because I just think Oklahoma State looks very much to have the wheels off the wagon.
Yeah, and didn't Oklahoma State, like, recently gave Gundy a big new contract and everything? I think it was after it was spring 2022, so a year and a half ago. So the affordability of firing him. I think his bio would be pretty large. But did you guys see Matt Campbell getting quite frustrated at a fan who was yelling at him? Yeah, going into the locker room. I think it was the halftime.
Saying he was on the hot seat.
Yeah, he was on the hot seat. I think Matt was not very happy. So yeah, this is an interesting one. And like Pat said,
someone needs to win.
Yeah.
I think Gundy. I don't think Gundy gets fired. I think he goes hard in the transfer portal. He had a quote the other day about, like, gee, maybe we should have done this. we're losing 18 older guys. We gotta.
He and Dabo, slow to adapt to the transfer.
Playing time is available. Desperation Bowl, at least half of it. Auburn at A&M. Jimbo is desperate. I don't believe Auburn is, but it would be certainly a nice, very important game for A&M. This season can really go bad. This is the kind of game they got to win, but it ain't easy to win. Ross?
Yeah, I was surprised to see the spread in this game being over a touchdown, because I know Auburn hasn't played a whole great teams, but Hugh seems to have them playing pretty well in the Aggies. Or I know they got back on track last week, but they just look, you know, pretty bad at times against Miami. This is a big one for Jimbo at home. If they're going to have any kind of, you know, decent to good season, you got to win games like this. But look out for the Tigers, though. Hugh's got them playing well, especially on defense. Ron Roberts, the defensive coordinator at Auburn, was at Baylor. Got them guys playing really, really good football.
Yeah, Auburn's done well so far with the Freeze era there. As Ross said, defense has been good. Peyton Thorne all of a sudden was a running key. He was a dual threat. He's been an okay runner, and then he ran like wild in their last game. But look, A&M, to your point, Dan, A&M has to win this game, I think. At some point, especially as is always the case, if Texas is up and we're down, that's bad. If we're up and Texas is down, that's the best thing. Right now, Texas is up. A&M can't afford to be down. They'll find the money to fire Jimbo after this season, I believe, even if it's an exorbitant amount of money.
The worst combination is Texas up, Texas A&M down, price of oil up. That's bad. That's not good. Huge opportunity for Auburn here to make an early statement and set the tone in that SEC West. All right, Desperation Bowl, maybe for both, but certainly for one. Boise State at San Diego State. Boise's 1-2, lost to Washington, lost to UCF. Or maybe they're 2-2. I don't know. Whatever they are, they've lost. They just played like North Dakota or something, one of the Dakotas. Yeah. Boise needs a win. They got to win this game, Pat.
Yeah, they do, and I think they will. I just don't think San Diego State's very good. You know, they don't have an offense. They don't have a quarterback per se. But Boise, look, the expectation is you win on the blue turf, and they lost to UCF 18-16. Talon Green, the quarterback, hadn't played quite up to expectations, I don't think. He was supposed to have a breakout year this year. So it is a must game, I think, for Boise to kind of maintain some faith and optimism in Andy Avalos, and I do think they will win.
Yeah, Taylor Green, 3 touchdowns and 4 picks. So they were this close to beating UCF. UCF won on, I think, a last-minute field goal, but they need this one bad.
Kind of desperation. I don't quite put it at the same level. Texas Tech at West Virginia. Tech has lost to Wyoming and Oregon, both close. Joey McGuire could use a good victory. West Virginia may be feeling a little chesty after their big backyard brawl, or they're completely hungover. I don't know. Could go either way on this one. But this is a kind of game Texas Tech looked at the beginning of the season and said, all right, we can go get that road game. Not so fast, my friend. Might not be that easy. Ross, you want to talk that one?
Yeah, the Mountaineers beat Pitt, probably feeling kind of good. Tex had a pretty tough opening slate. I mean, Wyoming, I think we saw Wyoming give Texas a kind of a run in Austin last week. So they're a good team. And then, of course, hosting Oregon, and they kept right there with them. So Texas was like
Oregon.
A team that...
Oh, no, they hosted them. My bad.
Tech feels like a team that, it's not a 1-2 team, but had some difficult games early in the year. But, hey, what did I say last week? No one walks into Milan Pusker Stadium or whatever and beats the Mountaineers.
It's one person, too, Milan Pusker.
Yes.
We were told.
There's nothing better for an embattled West Virginia coach than to win the backyard brawl. So that helped Neil Brown considerably. These were teams came into the season like Texas Tech with sky high hopes. West Virginia, like, God, I just hope we're not terrible. But Neil Brown at Big 12 Media Day just really struck me how like defiantly optimistic he was about his team this year. So I kind of like West Virginia's chances here. They might have a little something going on more than anybody expected coming into this year, and Tech might not be handling those expectations too well.
I just feel like all these games are like someone can build a good season or it could go really like, right. I liked West Virginia when they played Penn State. I thought they did pretty well. They lost in the end, but no one was expecting to win the game. All right. Oklahoma is at Cincinnati. Interesting game. Now, Bearcats were rolling first 2 weeks. Then they lose the victory bell game to Miami, Ohio. On the plus side, and I can't believe this person keeps getting mentioned on the show, a big week for her. I know, I'm sure she's quite flattered. Bearcat alum Travis Kelce is now apparently dating Taylor Swift. T-Swift really? Is everywhere on this show. Yeah, so this is funny because for whatever reason, like real sports shows felt the need to... I saw video clips of Colin Cowherd and separately Stephen A. Smith breaking down whether they're hoping the relationship works. And I like, we've crossed the Rubicon.
Yes, we have.
Can you imagine Stephen A. Smith discussing your new girlfriend, like how it's going, how it might go? Like, I would be one of the wild... First date was absolutely abomination. Like, I don't know, whatever the Stephen A. Oh, my God. I mean, even for Travis Kelce, who's like Super Bowl champ, very famous guy. But like, you got to be like, dude, this is whoa. Whoa. Yeah. Stephen A. Smith's breaking down my love life here. So anyway, that aside, are the Sooners for real? And can the Bearcats get off the mat after the not real Miami served them a little dose of Southwest Ohio humble pie there?
Yeah, this is the Scott Satterfield experience in Cincinnati. Beat Pittsburgh, you're 2-0. Everybody's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And then do something to reverse that. When he was at Louisville, if it's going bad, they were going to reverse it and do something unexpectedly good. When it's going good, they're going to reverse it and do something unexpectedly going bad. And that's what last week was. So now maybe they come back and reverse it again. I doubt it. Oklahoma is incredibly explosive offensively. First Big 12 game, Nippert Stadium. It'll be really cool. It'll be a great atmosphere. But I don't think Oklahoma can be slowed down enough.
Yeah, Dylan Gabriel's been tearing it up. 300 yards a game, 11 touchdowns, one pick for Oklahoma. They've been on fire. But I don't know that, you know, Dan asked, are they real? I don't know that we're going to find out this week. We might not know that until a few weeks when they play in the Red River rivalry with Texas October 7th.
Yeah, but the great Barry Trammell said at Big 12 Media Day, said, this is the worst schedule Oklahoma's ever had. If they don't win 10 games, somebody did something wrong.
There you go. Syracuse, 3-0. Now, remember they started hot last year, like 6-0 and ended up 6-6 or something like that? But still, 3-0 for the Q's. Transfer portal's been good to them. They are playing Army, which lost to Monroe, but won last week in impressive fashion against UTSA. We won't spend too much time on this, but if Syracuse wins, how real do you think the Orange are? Pat?
Yeah, I will say this. I think they do win. I think they're much improved. Now, they did lose their tight end, who's really good, Aronde Gadsden, to injury. But I think they're much improved. And look out, because guess what? Next week, Clemson, after playing a slobber knocker against Florida State, goes to the Carrier Dome. And Clemson has historically had trouble with Syracuse. I'm calling the upset there already. Syracuse going to win this week and win next week and be 5-0. And we'll be talking about them a lot more on the pod.
Look at Pat making picks a week and a half out. How about that? Boom. I looked to see who quarterbacking Syracuse, and I thought, there's no way it's still Garrett Schrader. He's been in football for 8 years. But lo and behold, there he is.
There you go. Yep.
Ran for like 190 last week.
Quickly, longtime listener, Dan Klobuchar, I believe his name is. He's a Purdue fan. Gets on me about a lot, you know, we get a lot of Purdue fights. He brought up the 16-game losing streak Purdue is on against with Wisconsin. So this is a chance for Purdue to end that. He notes the last time Purdue beat Wisconsin in West Lafayette was 1997. He was there. He was a student then. He's now 45 years old. So can it happen, Pat? Can Purdue pull the upset?
I don't think so. Purdue got trampled on the ground by Syracuse, and Wisconsin finally figured out we need to run the ball with Braylon Allen. I was actually thinking of going to this game because I'm going to South Bend the next day. And I thought, I hit West Lafayette, and then Wisconsin lost to Washington State. I was like, nah, forget it. But I think the Badgers continue their mastery of the Boilers.
Yeah, I agree.
Need a bigger drum. all right. Let's get to the race for the case. We got some serious games here. All right. Let's start ACC. Castle's crumbling. Maybe. Number four, Florida State at Clemson. FSU giving 2.5. Clemson Tigers are home dogs. Games at noon on ABC. Pat, who's winning?
Florida State. I think they're better. Clemson, finally, they got Cade Klubnik to not turn the ball over last week, so that was good. So they might be making some progress, getting him a little more comfortable in there. But they've got kicker issues, and I think Florida State's just better overall. I am taking Florida State for the big road W, the sod to turf game, if you go back to their old sod cemetery, and a big step towards the playoff, another one for Florida State. Win and cover.
The Boston College game, Florida State, Boston College, made me a little queasy about the Noles. They struggled at times, but even though I'm not super confident, I'm going to pick them to cover this in beat Clemson because, yeah, the Tigers still have real issues, especially offensively. They don't seem to be able to consistently move the ball, and Florida State has got that down pretty good.
Sean?
I think this game has potential to be a real snoozer if Clemson comes out flat. Florida State could run it up on them. I'm taking the Seminoles to cover the 2.5. I'm not scared of them being on the road at Clemson this week.
Wow. I got an opportunity to take Clemson Tigers. I'm going to do it. I'm going to take the whole Tigers.
Oh, Dabo.
Lone Dabo. Wait, let me say it right.
Little
Lone Clemson. That boy. That boy. That's what I say. Dabo. That boy. That boy. I can't. It's not a word. It's not a word. It's not my fault. It's not a word. Love the guy. Not a word. I'm taking him. All right. Yes, Duke was ridiculous, but they made every single mistake. I am believing in my leader, William Christopher. Give me 2.5. Give me the Tigers. Touch the rock. Let's go. All right. 19, Colorado at number 10, Oregon. The Ducks giving 21. And it's one of the games of the week. The Ducks are giving 21. 3:30 on ABC. Ross, you'll be there.
Yeah, that's just too many points. Gosh, even without Travis Hunter, that just feels like it's just too much. So I don't think that Prime and the boys are going to go in there and win. I do think they're going to keep it within 3 touchdowns.
I do not think they're going to keep it within 3 touchdowns. I think this sets up to be an absolute boat race. I think Colorado is going to be a bit emotionally worn out after the 3 weeks, after a double OT game that ended late, and you go on the road into the toughest atmosphere in the Pac-12, and Oregon's strengths will exploit Colorado's weaknesses. I think Oregon will run the ball like crazy on them. And I think that Oregon also, you are not sneaking. Colorado no longer is sneaking up on anyone. Oregon is like, oh, I can't wait to bring those Buffaloes in here so we can put them in their place. And they will.
My only worry is how much media press and interviews Deion Sanders has done this week. It seems like every day it's a new one. He's in some room with cameras and a microphone, but it hasn't stopped yet. And I think this Colorado team is just built differently from the ground up. So I'll take them to cover this game.
Yeah, I can't see press focus causing any problems. This is, I mean, the guy once took a helicopter between
football and basketball. Baseball
yeah. Once threw a bucket of water on Tim McCart. I mean, maybe it's where the players can stay focused. I'm going to take the Ducks here too. Colorado had no pass rush in that Colorado State game, right? Or a very limited pass rush. I don't see how they get one going against Oregon. And now you have Bo Nick. I think they get up big early and they can hold it 21. How about this though? Last week, Colorado was a 23.5 point favorite. This week, they are a 21 point dog, a 44.5 point swing.
Yeah. It's the third of their 4 games where they've been either favorite or an underdog by 20 or more.
Yeah. No one, Vegas cleaned up last week because everyone's betting CU. Yeah. And they cleaned up last week on that one. All right. Oregon State, number 14, is at Washington State. The Oregon State Beavers are giving 3, 7 o'clock on Fox. I think we're back to Ross on this.
You know, I do think Oregon State is is the better team. They got DJ running the show on offense now. They've been having success there. But nobody walks into Martin Stadium on the Palouse. So give me the Cougars to cover it in the Pac-2 Bowl.
Okay. Well, it is hard to walk into Martin Stadium because first you have to figure out how to get to Pullman. Just to find the stadium. That place, well, I don't get me started on another Pullman rant.
They're going to find it because it's the only other team in the league. So,
yeah.
Right. Tough.
No, I'm a Beaver believer. They're doing this. I picked them before the season to win the Pac-12. I think they can do it. And then next year they will win the Pac-2. Nice two-headed running attack with Damian Martinez and Deshaun Fenwick. And then DJ, yes, is doing a nice job quarterbacking. Defense is very good. Beavers win and cover.
I almost wish I could take the over in this game. This should be the country's game of the week for college football fans. Cam Ward versus DJ. It's just going to be fun. Should be a lot of points scored. That Oregon State defense just thumps, though. So I think that they could I think that they could pull this off and cover. So I will go with the Beavers.
Yeah, I'm Oregon State also. I think DJ is going to play well. I just think they're a little more of a complete team. All right, number 15, Ole Miss is at number 13, Alabama. We've talked last episode, all the trolling, all the intrigue. Alabama is a 6.5-point favorite. They opened at 7. Money seems to be popping in on Ole Miss. Game's at 3:30 on CBS. Pat, do we go to your turn.
I messed up. This is one of those where the upset seems so obvious that it probably won't happen, but I'm sticking with it. I think Mississippi doesn't just cover. I think Mississippi goes into Bryant Denny and wins, and then we really see the panic begin in Tuscaloosa. I'm not liking anything I've seen from Alabama so far. And Mississippi, as usual with Lane Kiffin, dynamic offense. They can run it. They can throw it. They've got some guys. We'll see if their defense is good enough, but they're not playing a very good offense. So I'm going with the Rebels. Win cover.
Well, I agree in that it's one of those games where the upset is so obvious. It seems like Vegas is just begging you. But I disagree in that the Rebels will win. But I think they cover. I think they stay within a touchdown. But I actually think Alabama and Nick Saban at home kind of rebound. Jalen Milroe at quarterback back as the starting quarterback. And they beat Ole Miss in a really tight and fun game.
A notable Taylor Swift lyric as of late. Karma is my boyfriend.
Oh, boy.
Lane Kiffin pushed it a bit too much. So the pendulum's going to have to swing back the other way, and now I have to take Alabama.
Never thought
that's what I'm afraid of.
Never thought we'd become a Taylor Swift podcast. Never did not see that coming, but here we are. I don't know. All right. That alleviates the pressure of me saying, wait, I can get a lone tied at home. Yeah, man, when Vegas pulls these stunts with this little, you run the other direction. Run the other direction. But I'm not, because I'm an idiot. 6.5 still seems like a lot. I think it's a close game. They've got the better quarterback at Ole Miss. They're going to score points. Texas scored points. I'll take Ole Miss getting 6.5. I just think that's just too much for what I think is possibly the better team. I think Alabama's getting a lot of points here because of the name Alabama. All right. Number 6, Ohio State at number 9, Notre Dame. We talked a lot about this game and the pressure involved. We talked about the very handsome quarterback coach duo of Marcus Freeman and Sam Hartman. I think they're going to do I'm pitching a TV show here. South Bend Vice. They just drive around in Lamborghini.
A Lamborghini in South Bend.
Yeah, white Lamborghini. They bust up a crime ring during, and then like
there's
hang
a few
out
of those in the south end of South Bend.
South Bend. Yeah. I mean, there's Vice, and then to hang out with the linebacker at night. You know, like Sam's got all of the college girls. Marcus has got like the kind of, you know, the attractive older but grizzled bartender trying to No offense to the family. I don't want to, you know, we're just writing them out.
Married father of six.
That's not a good show. So we got no offense. Anyway, South Bend Vice, Ohio State. Does Ryan Day and Sam Hartman compare beards before the game? That's another subplot here. No, Ohio State is giving 3, game 7:30 on NBC. Absolute monster game. Ross, it's your turn. Is it? I don't know whose turn it is.
Yeah, I mean, at Notre Dame, beat a rowdy environment. Hartman's played so well. In Notre Dame just seems like such a balanced team. And we've seen some hiccups here and there from Ohio State. I'm not on board that they're going to be able to walk in and beat Notre Dame at Notre Dame. So give me the Irish to not only cover the 3, but win the game outright.
Yeah, it's going to be a great game. I'm going to be there, super excited for it. I am taking the Irish. I think they do cover and win outright. Kyle McCord, big test. He's played progressively better, but now can you go in front of 75,000 people and a good defense, number one pass efficiency defense in the country right now for Notre Dame? They haven't played an offense like this. They haven't seen somebody like Marvin Harrison, but that's a good pass defense. And so I think Notre Dame has the offensive balance, and we've got to see whether Ohio State's D can stand up for 4 quarters against a high-level opponent. They didn't do it against Georgia. They didn't do it against Michigan. They haven't played anybody good since then, and so I think this is the big test, and I think Notre Dame passes the test, takes a big step toward the playoff.
My official Notre Dame fan source has abandoned humility, so that means it's time go with Ohio State. There's no rationale being used. It's we're going to beat Ohio State by 20. So they had a good 3 weeks of staying humble and just riding it out. Now, for the big test game, for whatever reason, he's flipping the other way. So I got to go with the Buckeyes to cover.
Abandoned humility. I like it.
I love Sean's reasonings are just fantastic. They're just never know what's coming.
Yeah, I got a buddy who's a Notre Dame fan who's annoying me.
I don't like him anymore. But now he's... I think I'm going to give him lone Buckeyes too. I feel like Sean's setting up for a massive week here. Mm.
Yeah.
I take those 3 points.
Yeah.
I think Notre Dame plays. They're going to go green jersey. I think they're going to play hard. If I wasn't getting 3 points, I think Ohio State can win this football game. I think they can beat them well. Look, Ohio State's listening to everybody crap all over them, and this is a massively talented team. And I think they're going to be fired up going in. I just like the 3 points for Notre Dame. So, and I like Hartman late. I could see a backdoor cover. So I don't know. I just, those points are enough for me. I'll take the Irish. All right, let's do lock of the week. Who's got one, Pat?
No, not yet.
Okay. Good work.
I got one. So Baylor hosts Texas. Look, I know Baylor started the season with a loss to Texas State. Not great. The next week, they probably should have beat Utah. They played well. I don't think they're a bad team. And Texas really struggled last week against Wyoming. And I just kind of think it's one of those games. It's a high spread. It's 15.5 for Texas. So I'll say Baylor at least stays within a couple of touchdowns. So give me Baylor to... as my lock of the week to keep it close with the Longhorns.
Okay. Sean, you got a lock of the week? Not yet, Pat. You go to the back of the line now.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Maryland Terrapins giving 7.5 to Michigan State. Michigan State looked awful last week, and Maryland staying decently sharp. It just seems like a game where it could all fall off the rails for Michigan State. So I'll go with the Terps to cover 7.5.
I think that's an excellent pick right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm not using this as my lock of the week because I think Dan is, but I like Iowa to cover against Penn State in an absolute root canal game full of punts and field goals and Kurt Ferentz-like stuff. but anyway, I think that's a 17-10 or 19-10, 4 field goals for Penn State sort of game. But my lock of the week, Tennessee laying 20, I believe it is, against UTSA quarterback Frank Harris is in his seventh year, has been battling a turf toe injury. Not sure whether he will play. And I think the Vols at home come back with a vengeance after the bad loss in Gainesville. So I think Tennessee rolls up a pretty big number.
I don't know. Maybe I don't want to make that my lock of the week. Now that you mentioned it, I actually like Penn State in that game. That might be the way I go with it. But let me go through a couple interesting spreads here. Marshall is a 4.5-point favorite over Virginia Tech at home. Tough times for Tech.
Very.
That ain't good. That one's pretty fired up. Duke is a 21.5-point favorite at UConn. I know it's UConn, but still, when was Duke a 21.5-point favorite on the road?
Duke's a juggernaut, baby.
I don't know. I mean, like, there's some numbers that just absolutely pop here. You know, this is gonna be wild. I'll go with the Penn State. I like Penn State in this game. I don't think Iowa's gonna score many points, and I think you got a whiteout, 7:30 at night. I think Penn State is gonna, they're gonna air it out. I think they're gonna be fine. I think 14.5. I don't like the 0.5. But I'll take them. We needed to talk about this game anyway. So I'm going to take Penn State as my lock of the week. Drew Aller, I think, will have a big night. It's going to be wild up there. I wish it was 14, not 14.5, but I'll take Penn State.
Penn State not popping very many big plays, and Iowa allows no big plays. So I think that they're going to struggle to get down the field.
You may be right. All right, that's our show. Appreciate everyone listening. We'll be back probably late Sunday, some point Sunday night, certainly for Monday morning, with all the overreaction of a massive weekend. Enjoy this. It's a great college football weekend. There, we just went through like, what, 10? How many pick games we just went through? Like 12?
At least a dozen, at least.
Yeah, at least. And there's others that are pretty like just kind of interesting.
UCLA, game. Utah. Come on.
We didn't even get to that. That's ranked two, right?
Two ranked undefeated.
We don't know if Cam Rising is playing, right?
We don't. They think there's some suspicion he will play. If he doesn't, I really like the Bruins in that. Bruins are pretty good running the ball, and their defense is the best that Chip Kelly has had.
Dante Moore is not officially the starter at UCLA, but I expect he will be. That's right. We didn't even get to that one. That's a big game. Jeez.
Yeah.
I expect Rising will play. If UCLA can go up there, if Dante Moore can go into Salt Lake City and win that game, man, that is just a monster for UCLA. That's a very interesting game. Sorry we didn't get to that. There's too many games, too many good weeks. Some weeks, not so much. This week, all there. Enjoy the games, enjoy your tailgates, enjoy your parties, enjoy the whole thing. Just please come back and talk and listen to us on Monday, and try to find a friend over the weekend who will come listen to us as well. That's your assignment. If you're listening this deep in the podcast, you have an assignment. That's your assignment. Get us a listener. One listener. Everyone gets me one listener, we're good. We need them. We're under pressure here. We need them. So we will talk to you later.